Final hour of the Rob Brown Show starts right now. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. The great Milonzo, Rob Brown, with you for one more hour. We turn it over to Bill Ryder of Ryder Than You. He turns it over to Jim Rome from noon to 3, and then from 3 to 7, you get Cole and Diesel, wire to wire, this evening. Of course, Cole Bryson creating a little viral moment for one Shane Beamer this weekend, pointing out to Shane that his team, for the first time in school history, had won 3 consecutive games against top 25 teams. Shane asked him to say it again because he liked it so much. Excellent line of questioning there from Cole Bryson that gave Shane Beamer a little moment in the sun, a little virality in the best kind of way. We've talked a lot about Carolina and Clemson so far this morning. Thanks to John Blau for joining us in that last segment to talk a little Clemson footy with us, as he was kind enough to do. Now, let's take a look at some of the other collegiate football games that took place this weekend, because there was no shortage of impactful results from around the landscape. And no shortage of games that matter this weekend as well. Taking a look back at week number 12, the Oregon Ducks survive, man. Rally in the fourth quarter to knock off the Wisconsin Badgers 16-13. Your final, one of the least impressive games that the Ducks have played so far. Dylan Gabriel, 22 of 31, 218 yards, no touchdowns, one interception. The Ducks did run for a 136 on the ground, but Tubby Walker ran for 97. The Badgers ran up 130. The Ducks, shockingly, won this game defensively. Braden Locke was held to just 96 passing yards on 28 efforts. 12 of 28 was his final line. One touchdown and one interception. But it really came down to the fourth quarter. It came down to Oregon on a rally. They were trailing by 7 as Wisconsin fans were jumping around to open the fourth quarter, and the Ducks handled their business in front of a sellout crowd, dominated the final period, put 10 points up in order to rally from a 13-6 deficit to win 16-13 was your final. The kicker for the Oregon Ducks' name is Atticus Sappington. That might be...
There's no third or...
Gene. Nope.
Okay, all right.
Nope, which I'm shocked by.
No, Esquire.
I feel like we have to give him something. Like, you can't end the name Atticus Sappington with just Sappington. That man needs a title. Like, if you're Oregon, don't you immediately just give that guy like an honorary doctorate's degree so he can be Dr. Atticus Sappington? Or give him an honorary legal degree, as Lonzo pointed out, so he could be Atticus Sappington Esquire. It must be said with a title and, I assume, a bit of an accent of some type, preferably like colonial British, I think would be fine. Anyway, Atticus Sappington was able to step into it and break the tie with a field goal that would send the Ducks back to the number one spot in the AP top 25. All 62 votes go Oregon's way, but the Buckeyes, 31-7 wins, probably could have been more, though, because Will Howard dropped a dime in this game that got taken off the board early that would have put the Buckeyes up. I don't remember if it was their first or second drive. But Will Howard, who has been, I think, kind of the whipping boy of this Buckeye team, right? We all know what Judkins and Henderson can do out of the backfield. We all know what defensively this team can do. The reason that folks had been sleeping on Ohio State has been Will Howard. Zoe, your thoughts on Will Howard this weekend? 15 to 24, 247, 2 touchdowns, no interceptions. To me, he stepped up from game manager and actually looked like a quarterback.
He is having moments of steps forward compared to the first couple games of the season, followed by small steps back. I mean, not huge steps back, but every once in a while it's like making some small mistakes that make you think, oh no, week one guy is still in there. But for the most part, been pretty happy with his play. and everything that he's done. We're going to find out if he has indeed made taken a huge step forward when they play real or pretender team coming up this week against Indiana.
I disagree with nothing. I disagree with nothing from that take. I think Zoe's spot on. I think that Will Howard's shown it's in there, right? He dropped when I say dime, I mean, I was on Bet for the Cycle on Saturday when that pass dropped, and I stopped the show to talk about it. I was like, yo, hold on. Will Howard just did something we got to talk about. Because Will Howard dropping that pass, dropping that dot, dropping that dime, dropping that dart in that moment early when, again, it was very early in the game. It wasn't like Northwestern was, you know, looking like they were going to somehow make this a contest. But dropping that dot in that moment to me, I was like, maybe he can be a dude. Maybe he can be a guy. And again, was it a spectacular showing? No. But they didn't need it to be, right? Now, the question mark is going to be, I agree with this part of Lonzo's take as well. Indiana has statistically, one of the best defensive front sevens in the Big Ten. I mean, in terms of rushing defense specifically, Indiana is inside the top 10 in just about every defensive metric against the rush. And I do think that you have to clarify that, but against the rush. So when I look at this team, my thought becomes, if they are able to limit, not stop, but limit Quinshon Judkins, Travion Henderson, limit these two cats out of the backfield, can Will Howard save you? Because I do think in order to limit those two, you have to sell out on those two. And for the record, this isn't just Indiana. This will be whoever Ohio State gets in the playoffs as well, whether it's in the first or the second round, depending on if they are able to win the Big Ten, get to the Big Ten and win the Big Ten. Whether it's the first round or the second round, anybody who wants to stop those two running backs will have to sell out to do it. If they have to sell out to do it, much as I pointed out with Lenora Sellers and Mizzou this weekend, if they sell out to do it, somebody's open. If they sell out to do it, what they are saying is, we don't think your QB can beat us. And I, for the record, even after this performance, I still think that's how you have to attack Ohio State. I don't think there's a different option here. I don't think there's we're going to let the running backs do what they do and we're going to remove Will Howard. Or we're going to play a balanced attack against the run. I think you have to attack the run, whether you're Indiana or whoever Ohio State catches in the first or second round. I think you have to sell out on the run and demand that Will Howard beat you with the arm if they're going to beat you. The problem is, in this game, Will Howard looks like at least it's in him to step up to the plate in that case. But the Buckeyes do get the win 31-7. They stay number two in the AP Top 25. Number three, Texas, gets into a bit of a slap fight with the Arkansas Razorbacks. They were 12.5-point favorites. They win by 10. 20-10 is your final. Quinn Ewers, 20 of 32, 176, two touchdowns, no interceptions. Texas rushes for 139 yards. They are able to keep Arkansas to just about 230 yards of total offense when it's all said and done. I didn't see anything special out of Texas. They were up against a Razorback team that was 5-4 coming into this one, 5-5 now. I'll tell you what I saw, or what I kind of was paying attention to. They were selling the crap out of this as if it is like the best rivalry of all time, right? They pointed out that these two teams used to play together in the old Southern Conference and that these two teams used to have beef because Arkansas used to believe that Texas had too much of a voice in conference matters and they wanted out, so they left. They end up in the SEC. Texas stays where they are. Texas now in the SEC. And they're like, oh, these Arkansas fans, they got a grudge against Texas. I don't know, man. Like, and even if they do, even if all that is legitimate, even if all that is true, they're just not that good. Does that look like a championship caliber Texas team to you? But Texas looked good, and then they lost to Georgia, and it's not that they've looked bad since then, but they escape Vanderbilt by three. They smack Florida, who then turned around and smacked LSU. We're going to come to that in a minute, because Brian Kelly might have to find a new family after what he pulled this weekend. And they skate by Arkansas. I'm not blown away by this Texas team. Like this, if you ask me right now, if we are looking at the AP top 25, in the top 25 last week, at least the top five matched the playoff rankings last week. If that stays true, I think if you ask me, like, what order of opponents out of the top five I want to play, I think, what order do you put Texas? I'm not going to say Oregon. I'm not going to say Ohio State. Of the top three teams, Texas, Penn State, and Indiana. So what order, if you're the Buckeyes and you get to craft your schedule here, which of those teams do you want to play? Well, Ohio State's an interesting choice because Penn State, I think, is the right answer.
All right, so everyone's been clamoring for years and thought, it's the same two or three teams in the playoff. And we finally have what I believe is parity in college football. There is no team where you go, that's a dominant team. Some could say Oregon, but did they dominate Ohio State when they played them? No, they won by two. Thanks to a Will Howard mistake, it might have been different. There is no dominant team in college football, and it's refreshing. I have no idea who's going to win this thing. I love that. I think that's awesome. Can't wait till the playoff actually starts. And as far as opponent goes, of course Ohio State wants to play Penn State first because it's the devil you know. And it's not a guaranteed first-round victory, but at least you got tape, your own tape, where you played them and beat them. And so you want those guys first.
That's fair. That's a fair answer. Let's flip it up then. Let's say it's I don't know, SMU. Let's say SMU sneaks in, right? They go to the ACC title game. They don't win it, but they get the 12th at-large bid. Theoretically, for the sake of the discussion. They're going to start at number 12. Let's say they get a win in the first round, and waiting for them are Oregon, Ohio State, Texas, Penn State, Indiana. I don't think we can rank Indiana yet because we haven't really seen them play anybody. The best they've played is Michigan, and Michigan made it a game. Indiana had to rescue themselves. I think we'll be able to answer this question a little more thoroughly next week after Ohio State, Indiana. But if you had to do it today in your SMU, who do you want in round one? Oregon, Ohio State, Texas, Penn State, or Indiana?
Indiana. For the reasons that you just pointed out, they haven't played anybody. And you definitely are going to know for sure after next week how competitive they are against Ohio State. Who knows? They might win. It's possible. They might be the real deal. Your favorite coach might actually be the guy. We'll find out.
All over the Kurt Cignetti bandwagon.
But SMU is not going to be playing in the first round because they're going to win the ACC and they're going to get a bye.
I got to tell you, Lonzo knows ball. Because he called SMU preseason. I was like, I think they're good. I don't know yet. And when they made the quarterback switch, I was like, now they're definitely not, right? Like, what's the last team that made a quarterback switch not due to injury that went on to win a conference championship? I'm not saying there never has been one. I just don't know off the top of my head. I was like, oh, they're cooked. They're cooked. And yet here they are. At number 13, 9-1. Got another win this weekend on the road. And SMU is, I think, on their way to an ACC title game. SMU really doesn't have anything left in the regular season that scares me. They got Virginia and Cal. They should win both of those games. That's ACC title game. Miami, who is the other team in the driver's seat for an ACC title game, has Wake and Syracuse left. I'm going to keep it a buck with you. That Syracuse game scares me a little bit for Miami. That Syracuse game at the end of the year scares me a little bit. Wake Forest, interesting. Wake Forest always seems to have an upset in there somewhere for somebody in the top of the ACC. But that Syracuse game, Fran Brown is not a joke. Not a joke. Syracuse, not a joke. Kyle McCord, not a joke. Not great. Not great. Good enough to upset Miami if Mario Cristobal doesn't have that team ready to go, as he has historically not in games like that one. That's the game Clemson's looking at, right? Because if Miami loses that game, Clemson's got an inside track at that point. So we'll see it, assuming they beat South Carolina. So we'll see how that plays out. All right, let's run to a break. When we come back here in just a minute, we'll take a look at some of the other top 25 results, including one of the unbeatens falling from the ranks this weekend. Penn State made some noise with their win. Georgia gets it done over Tennessee, who was ranked higher than them, We'll talk to that. And a texter just asked a question, said, Rob, do you believe a three-loss South Carolina team gets into the playoffs over a two-loss team with a weaker strength of schedule and fewer ranked wins? That's from Ty Duncan. Ty, I will answer your question when we come back on the Rob Brown Show in the Fan Upstate. Ty, text to the show, 71307. Start your text with fan, F-A-N, fan, and we will read them on the air. Ty, text to the show, said, Rob, do you think a three-loss South Carolina team can make it in over a two-loss team with weaker strength of schedule and fewer ranked wins? Do I think they can? Yeah. Yeah, I do. And I don't think there's any think about it. The College Football Playoff Selection Committee, I know that it was a different format last year, but it's the same committee as last year. And from what I can tell so far, though we've only had a few weeks to gauge off of, it seems like it's pretty much the same structure and decision-making process that they used last year. And last year, and I know a lot of you want to qualify it with different reasons, but I've said what I said, and I stand on it. Last year, Alabama got in over an undefeated Power 5 champion, Florida State, and I believe they got in on brand power. I believe they got in on the brand power, not just of Alabama football under Nick Saban last year, but I believe they got in on the SEC branding as well. I don't think the playoff selection committee, I don't think the college football playoffs, and I don't think ESPN and the television networks that run this thing were going to have a playoff without an SEC team in it. It's the biggest brand of any brand in college football. So I think brand matters. Now, the question mark is going to be, because South Carolina does not have the brand as a football team that Alabama has, the question mark is going to be, which two-loss teams are there? And are there enough spaces, right? Because as it stands right now, the two-loss teams that you would have to jump, assuming none of them lose another game, would be Alabama. Do you think they're going to take the Gamecocks over two-loss Alabama? No. Ole Miss. No, that gives you Lane Kiffin. Georgia, you're not jumping Georgia. Would they take you over a one-loss Boise team? Probably not. A two-loss Boise team? Absolutely. But if Boise loses the second game, they will tumble down the rankings. Would they take South Carolina over a two-loss ACC program who does not win their conference championship? No. Or excuse me, yes. But will there be one? The only team it could be would be either Miami or SMU. Would you take a three-loss South Carolina team who did? This is actually, and I think this is a fair question. So, do you think there is a path to the playoff for a three-loss SEC team over a two-loss ACC team who participated in the ACC title game and that was their second loss? Is there a doorway for South Carolina in that situation?
I think maybe it depends on how poorly they played in the ACC championship and also which team it is. If it were Clemson, Clemson still has a shot to get in. If it were Miami, Miami still has a shot to get in. I don't know if anybody else does. If SMU goes and they lose, they're not getting in.
If SMU loses to Miami by, say, a walk-off field goal, I don't know if you're jumping them. If SMU loses to Miami by 28, yeah, you jump him at that spot. I absolutely do believe that. You have a potential two-loss SMU, I think you have to say, would you if Texas A&M doesn't win another or doesn't lose another game, they're 7-2. Carolina, assuming that they are, you know, they move up. Because, again, you still have a lot of teams ahead of you. You do have a 6-3 Louisville team ahead of you. And I'm looking at last week's rankings. Obviously, these are going to be shifted a little bit tomorrow night when they drop based on wins and losses. But you got a 6-3 Louisville team ahead of you. This is a Louisville team last week, Louisville team that just lost to Stanford. They're going to fall, right? You have Clemson ahead of you right now. Clemson's not going to fall after their win at Pitt. So would a 6-3 South Carolina team go ahead of a 2-loss Clemson team? Doesn't matter. They got to play each other. If you don't beat them, this conversation's irrelevant. If you do beat them, you hand them their third loss, and your schedule's big. The point that I'm making here overall, and obviously the reason I got to go off of last week's rankings is because this week's don't come out until next week. South Carolina, in my opinion, doesn't have the football branding as a school, as a program, that Alabama had last year, but you do have the benefit of having the SEC branding behind you. And I absolutely believe that the playoff selection committee will give you some bonus points for doing it in the SEC. And on top of that, as we pointed out, when we were going into the weekend, the big conversation from last week was, if Georgia falls to Tennessee, is there a path for Georgia with 3 losses? And a lot of the ESPN talking heads were saying yes. And my response to that was, if Georgia has a path, and this is another jewel in the argument of why I've been saying branding matters a lot. If there was a path for Georgia with 3 losses, as everybody at ESPN was going off about there being, then there's got to be a path for South Carolina with 3 losses, especially considering those 3 losses, all 3 of them, by the way, to ranked teams, all 3 of them to teams in the playoff hunt. You lost to LSU by 3, you lost to Alabama by 2. A combined 5 points of difference between 2 top 25 teams. Now, LSU hurt you a little bit by getting smoked by Florida this weekend, but you can also make the argument you kind of started the downfall of LSU by beating the crap out of you. You lost the game, but by making it a physically imposing game. Ole Miss got the win over Georgia, handed them loss number 2. That helps you out a little bit. Texas A&M is right back into the hunt where they were. So overall, could a 3-loss South Carolina team find their way in? Possibly. Possibly. I do think you'll need some style points against Clemson. I think you'll need to go into their house and you'll have to beat them. I think if you walk out of there with a 1-2-3-point win, probably not as much of a chance as if you go in there and you beat them by 14 or 15 or 16 or 17. Joey B popped up in the Facebook chat. He said, I can tell you this, if Clemson loses to South Carolina, who then make the expanded playoff before them, that will make Clemson ask a lot of very difficult questions they've been avoiding for a couple of years now. I don't disagree with that take at all. When the 12-team playoff rolled around during this past off season, there were a lot of shows that asked the question, which schools benefit the most from the expanded playoffs? And just about every one of them said the Clemson Tigers, right? This is a team, especially after what happened last year to Florida State, this is a team that does not have a lot of error to work with, not a lot of margin to take an L and still fight their way in when there's 4. There's a lot more breathing room when there's 12. But that loss to Louisville has the potential. And I said this, we go back a couple of weeks to that L. I said that week because it was the same week as South Carolina's win over Texas A&M. We started the show on Monday, and I said, I think these two the win and the loss here, I think they are program-defining results. I said if South Carolina is able to win this game and then go knock off Mizzou, I think that is a program-defining result. I think is that is the type of result that if South Carolina is able to climb up, not lose another game, finish this year at 9-3, finish this year in a respectable bowl game, perhaps backdoor their way into the playoff 12 because they have not just the strength of schedule, but a win roster as good as anybody's. And we know the committee looks at who you lost to and how you lost. There is a reason South Carolina is the highest ranked three-loss team in America. If they went out, I think you go back to that A&M game and you say it's a program-defining result. And I said the same thing about Clemson taking on Louisville. I thought it was a program-defining L. Because if Clemson didn't get it back on the track and come out and dominate the rest of the year, they aren't going. They aren't going with two losses, especially one of those losses coming at home to Louisville. And Louisville turning around and losing to Stanford doesn't make it any better. So program-defining. And in a negative way for Clemson, in a positive way for South Carolina, this is why I said last week, going to Pitt and winning the game is fine. But going to Pitt and just winning the game is a bad spot for Clemson to be in. Every dub's a good dub. Some dubs are better than other dubs. This was not one of the better dubs. You got it. Good. You stay as a two-loss team. You don't take another ACCL. You keep yourself alive in the hunt. But I am convinced now, Clemson fans aren't going to like this. I am convinced now, a three-loss South Carolina team, if it came down to it, one spot on the line, and they didn't play each other, hypothetically. If both of these teams won out, and they can't, but if both of them did, I think a three-loss South Carolina team would jump Clemson. Now, Clemson, you have the chance to prevent that by handing them L number four. South Carolina, you have the chance to eliminate them by handing them L number three. But I think if both of these teams could win out without playing each other, I think South Carolina would jump Clemson for number 12 if it came down to them. All of that being said, I don't think it's going to matter because there's a lot of teams between both of these teams and the final at-large spot, and I don't think there's that many L's to go around. But it's college football. We'll find out. All right, when we come back, we'll look at the back half of the NFL scoreboard that we didn't get to earlier. Talk about some of the things we learned about teams this weekend, including the Bengals and the Chargers. Maybe Jim Harbaugh's not as much of a joke as we thought he was. We got that coming up. We got what the X is going on to end the show. All that coming up on the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Upstate. The Rob Brown Show continues. It's the Fan Upstate, final segment of the day. Get back to talking NFL football for just a few minutes here. We have looked at the early results from yesterday. Let's look at the later results from yesterday. We start with the Ravens and the Steelers, 18-16. Pittsburgh gets the dub yesterday. And very interestingly, if you look at the passing stats for Pittsburgh, no touchdowns. You look at the rushing results for Pittsburgh, no touchdowns. Look at the receiving stats, no touchdowns. They ended up with a whole lot of field goals, six of them off the foot of Chris Boswell yesterday. Very interesting. 205 yards, no touchdowns, but one interception for Russell Wilson. They amassed 122 yards on the ground, just about equal with the 124 they surrendered to Derrick Henry. By the way, Derrick, this stat blew my mind. In Baltimore wins, this is kind of one of those things that I've got to assume that Elder Harbaugh knows about. I've got to assume this is one of those things that Monken knows about. I got to assume this is one of those things Baltimore knows about. But if that is the case, I don't understand how numbers like this happen. In games this year that the Baltimore Ravens have won, there are seven of them. Derrick Henry averages over 21 touches per game. In games that the Baltimore Ravens have lost this year, Derrick Henry averages under 14 touches per game. When Derrick Henry touches the ball 14 times or fewer, the Ravens lose. When Derrick Henry touches the ball 21 times or more, the Ravens win. He touched the ball 13 times yesterday. The Ravens lost. The Steelers, on the other hand, did what they're going to do. They're just going to sustain drives. They're going to grind them out. They're going to falter in the red zone. That's a great way to get yourself beat in the playoffs. It's also a great way to get yourself to the playoffs, right? We're just going to dink and dunk around the field, extend games, whatever. Problem is, when you got to go up against three or four consistently good teams in a row, that starts to fall apart. And I think that's what happened here. This is 23 of 36, 205, no touchdowns, one interception. Since his return, Russell Wilson has had three really good games, and then this one. Still one. And so I do wonder how you, if you're Mike Tomlin, how do you balance those two things, right? How do I balance the fact that this was the first game where Russ kind of struggled to cap a drive with the fact that his defense was able to carry him to a win anyway? They gave up 7 to Baltimore in the second quarter. Baltimore did not get back into the end zone after that. What are we going for here for Pittsburgh? I don't know how I feel about, you know, we talked about the Chiefs last week coming into that game against Buffalo this weekend at 9-0. And I said, look, on one hand, it's probably the least impressive 9-0 team I've ever seen. On the flip side, that's not exactly an extensive demo to talk about, is it? Not a lot of 9-0 teams in recent memory. So if you're the least of a group of a handful of teams, and by the way, your franchise is like a solid chunk of those teams, what do I do with that information? What do we do about the 8-2 Steelers? They kind of, to me, have the same feel as the Chiefs. Lonzo, on one hand, you're 9-1. And the one took Josh Allen, getting two more Josh Allens stuck on the end of his name. On the flip side, as Lonzo's been pointing out all year, you're in fights.
And an illegal pick.
I heard that a couple times. Where did you see? Because I'm not saying it didn't happen. I just didn't see it. I wasn't watching.
Well, when a receiver comes across, and you know what a pick is.
Yeah.
The pick happened. Look it up. It's and it was never called. I mean, it was a mugging. It wasn't like a glance. It was straight up run into to the point where you can't say, oh, oops, I didn't see him. And even if you did, it's still illegal. It was one of those. That's fine.
I thought I heard, and I could be wrong, because again, I had this game on, but I had just gotten home from
when
the
was it Tony Romo, I think, pointed it out.
Okay, that's what I was going to ask, because I had this game on in the background at the house. I had just gotten home from the Swamp Rabbits game, had an afternoon drop yesterday. I had just gotten home. I had it on in the background. I intended on circling back around and catching up with this game. Instead, I went to bed at like 8 p.m., which is unheard of for me. But I thought I heard Romo or whoever it was talking about a pick that got missed.
And I believe it was in the play that Josh Allen ran the touchdown on. So, I mean, there were things like that. There was a catch that was ruled a catch when it wasn't a catch, when obviously it didn't get both feet down. There were things that happened in every NFL game. That was a little blatant. And there's a celebration online right now that the Chiefs magic finally ran out. But as I told you last week, there are two places you do not want to play a game because the refs are on your side. That is Baltimore and that is Buffalo. So, you know. They couldn't beat the refs and they didn't play well and they lost. But it was a blatant pick. It really was a really bad pick if you look it up.
I'm gonna go back and find it. Because again, I watched effectively the highlights, and shockingly, that didn't make the highlight list. Can't imagine why. That game, and we'll go ahead and jump over to that game, because that obviously was to me, the biggest game of the weekend yesterday. And again, I also have to point out, I think we have to point out, that this didn't matter because Buffalo's beaten Kansas City in the regular season plenty of times. Plenty of times. This can't beat him in the playoffs. I saw the prognostication earlier on the social media that's it. The Chiefs are done. The L streak starts now. I might relax on that a little bit. Kansas City's MO has never been to attack the regular season for an undefeated run. They want to win. They're going to fight. They're going to play good ball. But their MO has always been play hot into the playoffs, right? Play hot into the playoffs. Get hot at the right time. How many times have we seen a team that is white hot midseason And then, unfortunately, they lose the mojo with 2-3 weeks left to play in the season. And by the time you get to the playoffs, this team is just not white hot anymore, right? That's never been Kansas City. It's one of the most remarkably consistent franchises in the regular season. As Lonzo's been telling you all, they're not going undefeated. They're going to drop a game, maybe two, maybe three down the stretch. But they'll get hot when it matters. That's what they do. I have seen plenty of people talking about the demise of Patrick Mahomes. And it's almost like you kind of sit back and you chuckle a little bit, right? I was texting back and forth last night with a couple of people at the end of that game when Josh Allen ran it in. And they're like, that's it. Josh Allen's outdueled Patrick Mahomes, right? 27-42, 62, a touchdown, had, what, 55 on the ground plus a rushing touchdown that effectively ended the game by putting the Bills up 2 scores. That's it. It's over. Mahomes is cooked. And I'm like, guys, he's lost this game in the regular season before. Like last year when they went on to win a Super Bowl.
I sent you the play, so whenever it gets there.
Yeah.
And it's just that play.
I'm going to go look at it because, I am curious. I also think that, again, this is – I'll start with this. I was shocked this wasn't the Sunday Night Football matchup, right? How's this not – or Monday Night Football? How's this not your national primetime game? How's this not Sunday Night or Monday Night Football? But put that aside. I think that this is the Brady Manning of our day. And I think the NFL knows that. And I think they treat it this way. This is why I've said, like, if there's a game that I don't think the whistles are going to come into play today, this would have been it. Allen v. Mahomes is the most intriguing rivalry the NFL has right now, outside of team versus team. In terms of player v. player, Mahomes and Allen is the rivalry.
In the end, Kansas City lost because they couldn't block Buffalo's defense. Buffalo's defense was all over Patrick Mahomes yesterday for the entire game.
Do you think that's kind of been like the story of the year for Patrick Mahomes? Is that teams are, it feels to me like teams are attacking him uber aggressively.
Need tackles. Kansas City doesn't have tackles. You got Mr. False Start, and then you got a rookie. So, I mean, that's a big deal. The strength of their offense is up the middle, and they also didn't run the ball that much yesterday. But Isaiah is—he's back. He's better, and probably will be playing next week.
Has to be. You ran the ball 17 times. And by the way, this is interesting. You guys had only 50 plays yesterday. Buffalo had like 71. Now that isn't a bad thing. If you're a super explosive offense like the New Orleans Saints, right? Then you have 50 plays and they have 71. And you go, yeah, but like, you know, you pop a couple of 30, 35, 50, 56-yard touchdowns. Taysom Hill takes off around the edge for a 75-yard touchdown. And you go, that's only one play.
Taysom Hill, comeback player of the year.
I mean, 243 all-purpose yards yesterday? Stud. Beefcake, no doubt. I almost went and got a puppy just so I can name him Taysom yesterday. That's how well he played.
It was a monumental game for him.
Phenomenal game. If the team is... I'm not worried about 50 plays if you've got 38 points on the board, 42 points on the board, right? Because then you're going, okay, a lot of these explode. When you have 21 points on the board, when they have 30 points on the board, and they have 21 offensive snaps more than you do, what that says to me is you're turning the ball over and you're going on a lot of three and outs. And that is effectively what happened. This offense does look different if Isaiah Pacheco's out there. Kareem Hunt had 14 carries for 60 yards. I don't think Pacheco's getting you 60 yards on 14 carries, which isn't a bad day. I mean, he averaged over 4 yards a carry. That's NFL line for me, right? It's not a bad day by any stretch of the imagination. But it ain't good enough. And it certainly ain't good enough if Mahomes is only getting you 196 and throwing two picks. Now, the second pick, desperation time. You got a minute and a half left to play. You're down 9. You got to score. Get it back. Score again. I get it. That's a pick on a ball that Patrick Mahomes doesn't throw in a regular situation. And on top of that, as Lonzo has pointed out, was running for his life even against base pressure. And I do think that if there is a kryptonite that keeps Kansas City from becoming the first team to three-peat, that kryptonite is the offensive line up against some massive defensive lines. And there are some good defensive lines that they may have to square up against in the AFC playoff picture. But I'll simply say, if you're writing off a 9-1 football team because they lost the game to a 9-2 football team, it's kind of on you. It's kind of on you. Broncos dumped the Dirty Birds 38-6 yesterday. Sean Payton and Jim Harbaugh. So I may have been wrong about both of them.
Just a little bit.
I thought Harbaugh was going to take a year or two. He's 7-3. I thought Peyton was cooked, and with Bo Nix, there was no way they were going to get it done. Bo Nix goes off for 307 and four touchdowns, and they smoke the NFC South leading Dirty Birds 38-6. I may have been wrong about those two head coaches. whoops.
All right, time for What the X, where I ask Rob what the X is going on, and he will tell us what the X is going on. The first thing is Mike Vrabel.
Ooh. Mike Vrabel should be the next coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Close. It is people. The reason why he's trending is people think he should be the next coach of the Cincinnati Bengals.
Ooh. I'm not going to give up on Zach just yet. And I'm not because, and I said this coming into the year, this is the last year of these Bengals, the Bengals as constructed. And you had Ja'Marr Chase, who showed up 10 minutes before the week one game for the first time. T. Higgins was injured all preseason. He didn't have time. How does a team that has a quarterback performing like Joe Burrow is performing right now, that man has, he's going to have 4,000 yards with like 3-4 weeks left to play. He has a 24-3 touchdown to interception ratio right now. I don't understand how this team is losing other than the defensive front seven. It's just not anywhere near where they need to be. If your quarterback goes 28-50 for 356 and three touchdowns, you have no reason to lose that football game. I'm not going to give up on Zach, but you better go find a defensive coordinator who can figure this out. Vrabel needs to go to Jacksonville, though.
I mean, with his Ohio roots and all that kind of stuff, it just, I mean, that's why people are wanting him.
That's actually good
to be
fair.
There. All right.
Would you rather have Vrabel or Hoodie?
For Cincinnati?
For any team.
For Cincinnati, Vrabel.
For sure.
Because not only will you, he's got a better chance of getting some more Ohio players there, some more Ohio State guys there. There's just a lot of things, and he will be accepted a lot quicker there than, and it doesn't matter. I mean, you got to win, but I'd rather have him there than Hoodie, and he needs to go to Jacksonville, like you said. The next thing that's exiting is the Trump dance.
Okay, so the Trump dance has taken over sports, all right? The Trump dance has taken over. First off, I need...
I was already doing it before he did it, so I mean, you know.
First off, I need these athletes to get it right, because they're all doing it down here by the hips. It's up here by the shoulders, all right? It's up here, but you got to get it right. I saw Jon Jones do it after he knocked off Stipe Miocic. We're going to talk about that fight later this week. I didn't think it was as bad as you did.
Horrible. A waste of money. I will never spend money on UFC again. It's going to take a lot to get me to come back.
We're going to talk about that. We may have to get into that tomorrow instead of Fight Club, but we'll see. Because I didn't agree with that. But Jon Jones did it. Who was there? Was like two or three NFL guys did it yesterday. I know TJ Watt's done it a couple of times. Everybody's doing it, which is great. I get it. I understand it. But like, get it right. It's up here.
And the golf swing has to be included because that was part of the dance for sure. All right, the next thing that's Xing is Danhausen.
Danhausen is Xing because Danhausen has run out of bleeps to give on Twitter. He is just roasting people on Twitter right now. A lot of people coming after his gimmick. There was a guy who made a reference to him and utilized I won't say slur, but very aggressive word regarding Danhausen's mental capacity. And I'm assuming this is why Danhausen just elbow dropped him on Twitter for phrasing things the way he did. How's that?
That's part of it. The other part is that he's still under contract for AEW. They're just not using him,
which is disappointing.
Because they supposedly don't know what to do with him.
Yeah, that's a big problem for me. Like, just let him go out there and have fun. Especially when you are, you brought in one of those Costco D-bags, the boom guys, right? Like, if you were going to bring in loser social media influencers, not even fun social media influencers, dumb obnoxious ones, and make, like, give them matches, but you're telling me you don't know how to use Danhausen? I got to tell you, Zoe, I'm very rapidly running out of steam for AEW, which stinks.
Well, part of the problem is, he can't wrestle that good. At least what we've seen on AEW, he didn't look like he could wrestle that good. He must have been pretty good in the independents to get as popular as he did. And finally, the last thing, because the show should end the way it started, World War III is X-ing.
Which is 100% not happening. Yet.
I don't know. Putin's got those nukes ready.
That's true. And Biden did approve Ukraine to start launching strikes into Russian territory.
And there's a nuclear station not far from here. That thing gets hit, we're all dust.
Nice knowing you guys. Relax. Take a breath. We're good. We're fine. All right. Let's keep fighting about raw milk first. All right. Y'all have a great rest of your day. We'll be back tomorrow to do it all over again. But better don't drink and drive. I'll punch you in the face. See you tomorrow on the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Upstate. Later.